This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of audio reading service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Anita with
Mary.
For the next 2 hours, we will be reading selections from the Tuesday, November 18th Fort Wayne Journal Gazette, copyright 2025. We'll begin with news for the first hour and then take a short break. When we come back from the break, we'll read obituaries, then a number of features from the living section. After that, we'll read from the perspective section, including letters to the editor and editorials. After editorials, we'll read the TV listings, sports, and birthday announcements. The headlines from the front page of the Tuesday, November 18th Journal Gazette are Wastewater Plant Expansion Hailed, Judge Rebukes Feds Over Comey, UN ratifies U.S. plan for international force in Gaza, and drone strike sets Turkish tanker ablaze in Ukrainian port. Now, here's Mary with the first article.
Wastewater plant expansion hailed. Aqua Indiana says large project to keep pace with area's growth. Aqua Indiana leaders broke ground Monday on a $28 million wastewater treatment plant expansion near Lutheran Hospital in southwest Allen County. The Midwest Wastewater Treatment Plant expansion at 6811 Engle Road will serve customers in Allen, Huntington, and Whitley counties. It is the largest investment in the company's history, officials said. Sadzi Oliva, Aqua Indiana's president, said the capital project will allow the utility to keep up with the area's population growth. By investing in advanced treatment technology and increased capacity, we are protecting what matters most, our customers' health, our local waterways, and the future of this community, she said in a statement. This infrastructure investment will serve the Fort Wayne region for generations to come. The expansion will reduce the risk of sanitary sewer overflows, better control odor, and enhance sludge treatment to return cleaner water to the environment, according to a news release. This investment is part of Aqua's continuing infrastructure improvement program to replace decades-old water and wastewater infrastructure around the country, the release said. Also, the project will help protect local waterways, officials said. Cami Sutter, executive director of Little Water Wetlands Project, Little River Wetlands Project, said her nonprofit partners with Aqua Indiana to protect the environment and safeguard clean water. As Aqua expands its Midwest wastewater treatment plant, we are proud to continue working together as neighbors, partners, and environmental stewards dedicated to preserving the natural resources Fort Wayne and our surrounding communities depend on, she said in a statement. Aqua Indiana, a subsidiary of Essential Utilities, Inc., serves about 100,000 people in 16 counties across the state. It focuses on water, wastewater, and natural gas. Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania-based Essential Utilities, operates as the Aqua and Peoples brands, serving about 5.5 million people across 9 states. The company provides water, wastewater, and natural gas. On November 4th, Essential Utilities reported third-quarter earnings of $92 million, a 33% increase compared to the same 3 months of the prior year. The company also reported revenue of $477 million. In October, the parent company announced plans to merge with Camden, New Jersey-based American Water Works Company, Inc. In that announcement, Christopher Franklin, chairman and CEO, said Essential Utilities has prioritized sustainability, innovation, resilience, and best-in-class service during its 140 years in business. Together, we will have expertise, financial strength, and regulatory credibility to continuously improve our infrastructure and meet the evolving needs of our customers. American Water and Essential will continue to enable our communities to thrive, he said in a statement. The Fort Wayne construction project is expected to be completed in 2027.
Judge rebukes feds over Comey, says prosecutors made profound missteps. From the Associated Press, Dateline Washington. The Justice Department engaged in a disturbing pattern of profound investigative missteps in the process of securing an indictment against former FBI Director James Comey, a federal judge ruled Monday, in directing prosecutors to provide defense lawyers with all grand jury materials from the case. Those problems, wrote Magistrate Judge William Fitzpatrick, include fundamental misstatements of the law by a prosecutor to the grand jury that indicted Comey in September, the use of potentially privileged communications during the investigation, and unexplained irregularities in the transcript of the grand jury proceedings. The court recognizes that the relief sought by the defense is rarely granted, Fitzpatrick wrote. However, the record points to a disturbing pattern of profound investigative missteps, missteps that led an FBI agent and a prosecutor to potentially undermine the integrity of the grand jury proceeding. The 24-page opinion is the most blistering assessment yet by a judge of the Justice Department's actions leading up to the Comey indictment. It underscores how procedural missteps and prosecutorial inexperience have combined to imperil the prosecution pushed by President Donald Trump for reasons separate and apart from the substance of the disputed allegations against Comey. The Comey case and a separate prosecution of New York Attorney General Letitia James have hastened concerns that the Justice Department is being weaponized in pursuit of Trump's political opponents. Both defendants have filed multiple motions to dismiss the cases against them before trial, arguing that the prosecutions are improperly vindictive and that the prosecutor who filed the charges, Lindsay Halligan, was illegally appointed. A different judge is set to decide by Thanksgiving on the challenges by Comey and James to Halligan's appointment. Though grand jury proceedings are presumptively secret, Comey's lawyers had sought records from the process out of concern that irregularities may have tainted the case. The sole prosecutor who defense lawyers say presented the case to the grand jury was Halligan, a former White House aide with no prior prosecutorial experience who was appointed just days before the indictment to the job of interim U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia. In his order Monday, Fitzpatrick said that after reviewing the grand jury transcript himself, he had come away deeply concerned about the integrity of the case. Here, the procedural and substantive irregularities that occurred before the grand jury and the manner in which evidence presented to the grand jury was collected and used may rise to the level of government misconduct resulting in prejudice to Mr. Comey, Fitzpatrick said. The Justice Department responded to the ruling by asking that it be put on hold to give prosecutors time to file objections. The government said it believed Fitzpatrick may have misinterpreted some facts in issuing his ruling. Fitzpatrick listed, among nearly a dozen irregularities in his ruling, two different comments that a prosecutor, presumably Halligan, made to the grand jury that he said represented fundamental misstatements of the law. The actual statements are blacked out, but Fitzpatrick said the prosecutor seems to have ignored the fact that a grand jury may not draw a negative inference about a person who exercises his right not to testify in front of it. He said she also appeared to suggest to grand jurors that they did not need to rely on what was presented to them and could instead be assured that there was additional evidence that would be presented at trial. The judge also drew attention to the jumbled manner in which the indictment was obtained and indicated that a transcript and recording of the proceedings do not provide a full account of what occurred. Halligan initially sought a three-count indictment of Comey, but after the grand jury rejected one of the three proposed counts and found probable cause to indict on the other two counts, a second two-count indictment was prepared and signed. But Fitzpatrick said it was not clear to him in reviewing the record that the indictment that Halligan presented in court at the conclusion of the process had been presented to the grand jury for their deliberation. Either way, this unusual series of events, still not fully explained by the prosecutor's declaration, calls into question the presumption of regularity generally associated with grand jury proceedings and provides another general issue the defense may raise to challenge the manner in which the government obtained the indictment, he wrote.
UN ratifies U.S. plan for international force in Gaza. The UN Security Council on Monday approved a U.S. plan for Gaza that authorizes an international stabilization force to provide security in the devastated territory and envisions a possible future path to an independent Palestinian state. Russia, which had circulated a rival resolution, abstained along with China on the 13-0 vote. The U.S. and other countries had hoped Moscow would not use its veto power on the United Nations' most powerful body to block the resolution's adoption. The vote was a crucial next step for the fragile ceasefire and efforts to outline Gaza's future following 2 years of war between Israel and Hamas. Arab and other Muslim countries that expressed interest in providing troops for an international force had signaled that Security Council authorization was essential for their participation. The U.S. resolution endorses President Donald Trump's 20-point ceasefire plan, which calls for a yet-to-be-established Board of Peace as a transitional authority that Trump would head. It also authorizes the stabilization force and gives it a wide mandate, including overseeing the borders, providing security, and demilitarizing the territory. Authorization for the board and force would expire at the end of 2027. U.S. Ambassador Mike Waltz called the resolution historic and constructive, saying it starts a new course in the Middle East. Today's resolution represents another significant step towards a stable Gaza that will be able to prosper and an environment that will allow Israel to live in security, he said. He stressed that the resolution is just the beginning. During nearly 2 weeks of negotiations on the U.S. resolution, Arab nations and the Palestinians had pressed the United States to strengthen the original weak language about Palestinian self-determination. The U.S. revised it to say that after the Palestinian Authority, which now governs parts of the West Bank, makes reforms, and after redevelopment of the devastated Gaza Strip advances, the conditions may finally be in place for a credible pathway to Palestinian self-determination and statehood. The United States will establish a dialogue between Israel and the Palestinians to agree on a political horizon for peaceful and prosperous coexistence, it adds. That language angered Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, which had vowed to oppose any attempt to establish a Palestinian state. He has long asserted that a Palestinian state would reward Hamas and eventually lead to an even larger Hamas-run state on Israel's borders. A key to the resolution's adoption was support from Arab and Muslim nations pushing for a ceasefire and potentially contributing to the international force. The U.S. mission to the United Nations distributed a joint statement Friday with Qatar, Egypt, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, Pakistan, Jordan, and Turkey, calling for swift adoption of the U.S. proposal. The vote took place amid hopes that Gaza's fragile ceasefire would be maintained after a war set off by Hamas's surprise attack on southern Israel on October 7, 2023, which killed about 1,200 people. Israel's more than two-year offensive has killed over 69,000 Palestinians, according to the Gaza Health Ministry, which does not distinguish between civilians and combatants, but says the majority are women and children. Russia last week suddenly circulated a rival proposal with stronger language supporting a Palestinian state alongside Israel, and stressed that the West Bank and Gaza must be joined as a state under the Palestinian Authority. It also stripped out references to the transitional board and asked UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres to provide options for an international force to provide security in Gaza and for implementing the ceasefire plan, stressing the importance of a Security Council role. The U.S. resolution calls for the stabilization force to ensure the process of demilitarizing the Gaza Strip and the permanent decommissioning of weapons from non-state armed groups. A big question is how to disarm Hamas, which has not fully accepted that step. It authorizes the force to use all necessary measures to carry out its mandate in compliance with international law, which is UN language for the use of military force. The resolution says the stabilization troops will help secure border areas, along with a Palestinian police force that they have trained and vetted, and they will coordinate with other countries to secure the flow of humanitarian assistance. It says the force should closely consult and cooperate with neighboring Egypt and Israel.
Drone strike sets Turkish tanker ablaze in Ukrainian port, from the Associated Press, Dateline Kyiv, Ukraine. A drone struck a Turkish flag tanker and set it ablaze on Monday in southern Ukraine's Odessa region, officials said, a day after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky signed a deal to import U.S. liquefied natural gas through the area. The MT Orinda was hit during the offloading of liquefied petroleum gas at Izmail Port, Turkey's Directorate for Maritime Affairs said. All 16 crew on board evacuated and no one was hurt, it said. Russia has used drones, missiles, and artillery to repeatedly batter the Odessa region, especially its Black Sea ports, since its full-scale invasion of its neighbor nearly 4 years ago. There was no immediate Russian comment Monday. Ukrainian officials didn't comment specifically on the tanker, although Regional Military Administration head Ole Kieper said Russian drones attacked the Odessa region overnight and damaged energy and port infrastructure in several cities. The attack sparked multiple fires and damaged an unspecified number of civilian vessels, Kieper said, adding that one person was injured. Izmail lies on a Black Sea estuary and is one of a string of ports that are vital for Ukrainian imports and exports. With Russia also targeting Ukraine's energy infrastructure, Zelensky is trying to ensure gas and other energy imports that can help see his country through the approaching winter. Zelensky on Sunday was on an official visit to Greece. The U.S. liquefied natural gas will flow to Odessa via pipelines from the northern Greek port of Alexandroupolis starting in January. Authorities in Romania, meanwhile, ordered the evacuation of people and animals from two villages close to Izmail on the Romanian side of the border, saying the nature of the tanker's cargo required such precautions. Elsewhere in Ukraine, Russian missiles killed three people and injured 11 others in Bala Kilia, in the northeastern Kharkiv region, in an overnight attack. Four girls aged 12, 14, 15, and 17 were among those injured, authorities said. Russian drones and artillery also killed two people and injured two others in a daylight attack on Nikopol in the central Dnipropetrovsk region on Monday. The attack hit high-rise apartment blocks, stores, and a hair salon, said the regional head of the military administration, Vladislav Hivanenko. The United Nations says Russian strikes have killed more than 12,000 Ukrainian civilians during the war. Russia fired two Iskander-M ballistic missiles and 128 strike and decoy drones across the country during the night, Ukraine's Air Force said. Russian air defenses shot down 36 Ukrainian drones overnight, Russia's defense ministry said, as Ukraine tries to hit back at Russia's power grid. A Ukrainian drone attack damaged an electricity substation in Russia's Ulyanovsk region, Governor Alexei Ruski wrote on social media, adding that no casualties were reported and that local power supplies were working normally. And with this article, there is a small photo, color photo from the Associated Press. It appears to show a cargo ship with flames and smoke coming from it. And it says, this image released on Monday by Romania's emergency services, ISU, shot from the Romanian side of the border on the Danube River, shows a cargo ship loaded with liquefied petroleum gas engulfed by flames after Russian strikes on Ukrainian port infrastructure.
Fantasy of Lights opens at City Park. Blue Jackets' Fantasy of Lights opened by celebrating a woman who loved to spread joy. The annual light-filled attraction opens each year with the flip of a switch. Jim LaGault, a former Blue Jacket employee, and his family got that honor this year. They did it for their daughter, Katie Joy, who had cancer. The 22-year-old died October 16th, according to her obituary. Blue Jacket and her family wanted to honor her by spreading joy through the 31st season of Fantasy of Lights, said Tony Hudson, the nonprofit's CEO. Blue Jacket works to provide training and opportunities to anyone with a barrier who is striving to earn gainful employment. Fantasy of Lights includes more than 200 animated displays along the drive that's more than 3 miles through the Franke Park area. The spectacle that features more than 3 million lights typically takes about 30 to 45 minutes to drive through, according to its website. People can listen to synchronized music by turning to 91.7 FM. The Blue Jacket tradition is joined for the first time by Wild Lights at the Zoo. The Fort Wayne Zoo exhibit that people will walk through opens its season November 28th, the day after Thanksgiving. Tickets to the events are sold separately. Fantasy of Lights costs $20 per personal vehicle, and Wild Lights at the Zoo costs $12 per person without a membership. Information for both events, including schedules and how to buy tickets, is online at fwlightfest.org. Anyone who purchases tickets to Fantasy of Lights or Wild Lights at the Zoo will have access to Christmas Village, which includes free hot chocolate, a winter wonderland, an outdoor vendor district, and Santa's workshop. With this article are two large color photos. These are taken by Mike Durbin. The first shows a train, and it's an engine and two cars filled with gifts and then a little caboose. And it says a Christmas train depot display is seen Monday evening at Blue Jacket's Fantasy of Lights in Franke Park. And the second color photo shows people surrounding a board with the big switch to turn on the Fantasy of Lights. These people all have matching hats. They're dressed in appropriate winter wear with jackets, gloves, and vests. Underneath this, it says Jim LaGault, a former Blue Jacket employee, and his family flip the ceremonial switch Monday evening to open the 31st season of Blue Jacket's Fantasy of Lights at Franke Park in memory of their daughter, Katie Joy LaGault, who recently lost her battle with cancer.
Two sides in Luer's suit argue on Jane Doe's. Plaintiffs in abuse case wish to stay anonymous, by Ashley Sloboda of the Journal Gazette. The young women suing Bishop Luer's High School and the local Catholic diocese must now wait for an Allen Superior Court judge to decide whether they can maintain their anonymity. The next scheduled event in the case, which stems from accusations that school officials failed to act on reported sexual exploitation, is a status conference on March 25th. Lawyers for each side argued Friday why the young women suing the school, diocese, and four officials should or shouldn't remain known as Jane Doe's in court proceedings. The nine Jane Doe's were minors at the time of the alleged activity, but their lawyers in a September 30th filing said they are now young adults. At the women's request, Judge Andrew Williams closed the hearing about the pseudonyms to the public and journalists. A court document obtained Monday didn't detail the participants of the hearing beyond the plaintiffs' and defendants' lawyers, but an earlier filing indicated four of the women, including two who recently turned 18, were expected to be called. The lawsuit stems from allegations of systemic failure to protect female Bishop Luer's students from sexual exploitation involving pornographic videos created by male students. The boys allegedly superimposed their female classmates' names on the explicit content, portraying them as participants in sexual acts. Anonymity has been an issue since August, when the defendants' lawyers filed a motion to name the adults involved. They have asserted anonymity is not allowed under trial rules except in exceptional circumstances. Justification for the anonymity that the lawsuit involves sensitive material and some plaintiffs were minors at the time their claims arose isn't adequate, according to previous filings. Having the women proceed in their own names would create public record that the images are not them, the school's lawyers have also said. The women's lawyers have said in court documents that publicly identifying the Jane Doe's would exacerbate the harm they've endured. Such an act would reactivate the trauma responses they experienced and would contribute to more emotional injuries, such as anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder, the attorneys have said, citing a psychologist's assessment. Williams is considering the matter. Online court records do not say when a decision is expected.
There's another large color photo in today's paper. This one is taken by Mike Durbin. The title is Out for a Stroll on National Take a Hike Day. And in this photo, there's a bright sun in the background, a lot of trees with autumn colors, and there are 10 people. They are all dressed in appropriate winter gear. They've all got jackets, hats, gloves. Most of them have on dark glasses because it's so sunny out, and they are walking along a trail. Underneath this photo, it says Don Ritchie, Greenway's manager for the city of Fort Wayne, leads a group on a leisurely 2-mile stroll along the Pufferbelly Trail on Monday in celebration of National Take a Hike Day. There are some news briefs in today's paper concerning Fort Wayne and Allen County. The first is titled, Lutheran Hospital Recognized for Expertise with Chest Pain. Lutheran Hospital has been recognized by the American College of Cardiology for its demonstrated expertise and commitment to treating patients with chest pain, officials announced Monday. Lutheran Hospital received Chest Pain Center accreditation with primary PCI and resuscitation this month, based on an on-site evaluation of the staff's ability to evaluate, diagnose, and treat patients who could be experiencing a heart attack. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 730,000 Americans suffer a heart attack each year. The most common symptom of a heart attack for both men and women is chest pain or discomfort. However, women are more likely to have atypical symptoms. Other heart attack symptoms include tingling or discomfort in one or both arms, back, shoulder, neck, or jaw, shortness of breath, cold sweat, unusual tiredness, heartburn-like feeling, nausea or vomiting, sudden dizziness, and fainting. The next news brief is titled, Fort Lauderdale Flights to Begin. Fort Wayne International Airport will begin nonstop flights to Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport on Allegiant Air beginning on Thursday, officials announced on Monday. The inaugural flight to Fort Lauderdale will depart at 5:56 p.m. Among the destinations served from Fort Wayne with nonstop flights are Atlanta, Charlotte, Chicago, Dallas-Fort Worth, Detroit, Las Vegas, Minneapolis-St. Paul, Orlando-Sanford, Phoenix-Mesa, Punta Gorda-Fort Myers, and Sarasota and Tampa-St. Petersburg. The next news brief is titled, Stuff a Bus to Collect Food. The 30th annual Stuff a Bus Radiothon will collect non-perishable food items on November 24th, 25th, and 26th to be distributed by the Associated Churches Neighborhood Food Network of 20 food pantries. According to Roger Reese, Executive Director of Associated Churches, the community's need for support has reached critical levels. The bus will be parked in the Georgetown Square parking lot at 6320 East State Boulevard, Fort Wayne, early next week for 3 days, collecting non-perishable food items. Donation hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day. Suggested items include non-perishables, such as pasta, noodles, mac and cheese, cereal, boxed rice, canned meat/tuna, peanut butter, canned spaghetti sauce, canned fruits, vegetables, boxed potatoes, and soup. Financial donations can be made by texting BUS to 44321. And the next news brief is titled, West Central Plans Ceremony to Christen Its New Truck. The West Central Fire Protection District will host a ceremony at 1 p.m. Saturday to welcome a new pumper truck into service at 11321 Aboit Center Road, Fort Wayne. The public is invited to participate. Firefighters will perform a traditional wet-down and push-in ceremony with the 2025 Pierce Velocity PUC pumper, the tradition that dates back to the 1800s. After the wet-down, Chief Gail Seltzer II, firefighters and local community members will participate in the push-in, guiding the new apparatus onto its bay. The new pumper, purchased primarily with funds from Aboit Township's Cumulative Fire Fund, is being described as a game-changing asset for serving and protecting residents across Aboit and Lake Townships.
Continuing Continuing with several other news briefs from today's paper, the next is NDOT seeks advice on plan. The Indiana Department of Transportation is inviting the public to review and comment on its statewide transportation improvement program. The public comment period is open through Sunday. Go online to tinyurl.com/4R6P9ZMD. And that site will be available to you again if you call the station at 260-421-1376. Go to that site to access the project list, scroll to the bottom of the page, and find the link under the heading Draft STIP Documents. The link to the comment form is just below the amendment link. Next, mountain bikes for girls. A Pleasant Lake community partnership between the Anthony Wayne Scout Reservation and dedicated community partners provides new mountain bikes for girls. The new addition to the High Adventure programming, four new Trek mountain bikes specifically sized for girls. The initiative is designed to boost self-confidence and teach valuable life skills to local girls ages 11 to 17. Mountain biking isn't just a fun outdoor activity. It's a powerful tool for building confidence and independence, Director Betsy Yankowiak said. By learning to maintain and master these bikes, these young women gain not only practical skills, but also the belief that they can tackle bigger challenges, whether it's car repair or a major project at school. The Anthony Wayne Scout Reservation is owned by the Anthony Wayne Area Council of Scouting America. The nonprofit organization serves youth in all 11 counties in Northeast Indiana. And keep leaves from drains, says the city. With rain in the forecast, City Utilities is asking residents to help prevent street flooding by keeping raked leaves out of the roadway, officials said Monday. When leaves wash into storm drains, they can block water flow and cause backups in nearby neighborhoods. Residents should place leaves in the park strip or behind the curb while waiting for collection, never in the street. Keeping leaves out of the streets helps protect our neighborhoods and ensures stormwater drains can function correctly. Remember, officials said, only rain goes in the drain.
Angola teacher charged over THC candy. Students ate gummies she brought to class, authorities said. An Angola high school teacher was formally charged Monday with felonies after students in search of candy allegedly ate THC-infused gummies they found on a counter in her classroom. Deborah Lee McGillum of Reading, Michigan, later told police she must have forgotten to put the edibles away after her lunch break, according to court records. McGillum has been charged with felony possession of a controlled substance on school property and neglect of a dependent. She was also charged two misdemeanor counts of operating a vehicle while intoxicated, with one specifying she had a Schedule 1 or Schedule 2 drug in her system. Two students, one a minor and the other age 18, in McGillum's class during the last period Thursday, reportedly found a bowl of multicolored candy-like cubes on a table in the classroom, Detective Jordan Tripp wrote in a probable cause affidavit. The minor student told police that he and his friend were looking for candy because many teachers will keep a bowl out for students. The minor student said he put three cubes in his mouth but spit out about two after chewing because they tasted bad. His friend swallowed two pieces, as the minor student told him the candy tasted like marijuana. The adult student went to McGillum, and the teacher told the students that the candies were marijuana edibles, but they were a low dose and you're going to be okay, the minor told police. McGillum then reportedly asked the students to keep it between them. The minor student said he had a headache and was tired after consuming the THC candies. His mother, who was present for the interview, said the student didn't want to get out of bed in the evening. She took a photo of him because he looked so abnormal and high, the affidavit said. A bowl matching the description, along with an unopened package of edibles, was found in McGillum's vehicle on school property the following day when the school resource officer started investigating, according to court documents. When contacted by police, McGillum said she was home in Michigan but would drive back to Angola to give investigators more information. Tripp asked another detective for help locating her, and the officer followed her from her home to the Steuben County Sheriff's Office, the affidavit said. The officer saw her break several traffic rules by going 12 miles over the speed limit, violating a lane, and failing to use a turn signal. When interviewed by police, McGillum said she ate two 10-milligram edibles about 6:15 a.m. and then two more about 9:30 a.m., the affidavit said. Officers had her perform a standardized field sobriety test and provide a blood sample. The officer then recommended she be charged with operating while intoxicated. McGillum told police she had worked for Angola High School for at least 8 years, and she works part-time at Smiles Dispensary in Reading. She's a medical patient who uses THC daily, she told police. Recreational and medicinal marijuana is legal in Michigan, but not in Indiana. Tripp said McGillum admitted she had the edibles in her classroom, which were then ingested by two students. She also admitted she had the items in her vehicle on school property, according to the affidavit. McGillum was held on a $6,500 bond, a Saturday news release said. The incident remains under investigation by the sheriff's office and the Steuben County Prosecutor's Office, and a report was filed with the Department of Child Services.
Trump airs his rage at state GOP leadership, assails Braun and others over failing to redistrict, by Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. President Donald Trump has called out two Indiana state RINO senators, as well as Governor Mike Braun, for the state's failure to move forward with redrawing congressional boundaries. Braun worked behind the scenes for months to garner legislative support and eventually called a special session for a new map. Senate President pro tempore Roderick Bray on Friday announced the caucus still doesn't have the necessary votes and that his chamber would not convene December 1st as planned. Very disappointed in Indiana State Senate Republicans led by RINO Senators Rod Bray and Greg Goody for not wanting to redistrict their state, allowing the United States Congress to perhaps gain two more Republican seats, Trump posted on Truth Social on Sunday morning. The Democrats have done redistricting for years, often illegally, and all other appropriate Republican states have done it, he continued. Because of these two politically correct type gentlemen and a few others, they could be depriving Republicans of a majority in the House. A very big deal. Hours after Trump named Goody specifically, he was the victim of swatting at his Vigo County home. That is when a prankster calls police and reports a bogus need for emergency services at an address. Vigo County Sheriff's deputies responded to the incident under the impression of a domestic violence emergency. The deputies professionally fulfilled their duty, Goody said in a statement. While this entire incident is unfortunate and reflective of the volatile nature of our current political environment, I give thanks to God that my family and I are okay. The president has been pushing GOP-led states to change their congressional maps to ensure a Republican U.S. House majority in 2026. Some Democratic-controlled states have responded in kind, moving to add more blue seats. Trump said no one is calling out California, which passed a constitutional amendment in the recent election to pick up 5 seats and blamed weak Republicans for causing problems. Then, Trump turned his attention to Braun, who has been a vocal supporter of his. Quote, "Also a friend of mine, Governor Mike Braun, perhaps is not working the way he should to get the necessary votes. Considering that Mike wouldn't be governor without me, not even close, is disappointing," Trump wrote. He ended his lengthy post by saying any Republican voting against redistricting should face a primary opponent. "Indiana is a state with strong, smart, and patriotic people. They want us to see our country win and want to make America great again. Senators Bray, Goody, and the others to be released to the public later this afternoon should do their job and do it now. If not, let's get them out of office ASAP. 13 Senate Republicans have announced their support, with 8 publicly against. Bray and Goody, along with 17 other Senate Republicans, have not said where they stand on redistricting. Bray has repeatedly reported a lack of supportive votes among the 40-member caucus, while Goody recently held a town hall to hear from constituents on redistricting. Not one person spoke in support.
Homeowner charged in fatal shooting of house cleaner. This article is from the Associated Press, Dateline Lebanon, Indiana. An Indiana homeowner accused of killing a house cleaner who mistakenly arrived at his front door was charged with voluntary manslaughter on Monday in a case that could test the limits of the Stand Your Ground laws. Kurt Anderson, age 62, could face anywhere from 10 to 30 years in prison and a $10,000 fine if he is convicted. He is being held in the Boone County Jail pending an initial court hearing. Officers found Maria Florinda Rios Perez de Velasquez, age 32, dead on the front porch of a home in Whitestown, an Indianapolis suburb, on November 5th. Authorities said the Guatemalan immigrant was part of a cleaning crew that went to the wrong house just before 7 a.m. Anderson shot her through the front door with no warning about a minute after hearing someone try to unlock the door, according to a probable cause statement. Rios' husband told media outlets that he was with her on the porch. He didn't realize she had been shot until she fell back into his arms, bleeding. On a fundraising page, her brother described Rios as a mother of 4 children. Indiana is one of 31 states with a Stand Your Ground law that permits homeowners to use deadly force to stop someone they believe is trying to unlawfully enter their dwelling. But police said there's no evidence Rios entered the home before she was shot. Anderson's attorney, Guy Relford, posted a statement on X saying he was disappointed that prosecutors charged his client. He said Anderson had every reason to believe his actions were justified and the Stand Your Ground law clearly protects him. Mr. Anderson's actions must be evaluated based on the circumstances as he perceived them, Relford said in the statement. Boone County Prosecutor Kent Eastwood told reporters at a news conference that the decision to charge Anderson was not difficult. Stand Your Ground protections don't apply because Anderson lacked enough information to know if his actions were reasonable, Eastwood said. The prosecutor said he planned to prove that Anderson couldn't have reasonably believed he needed to use deadly force, given what he knew at the time. According to the probable cause affidavit statement, Anderson told investigators that he and his wife were asleep in the upstairs bedroom when he heard a commotion at the door that grew more intense. He thought someone was using keys or tools on the front door. Frightened, he went to the top of the stairwell and saw through the home's windows that two people were outside the front door. He said to himself, "What am I going to do? It's not going away, and I have to do something now." He said he'd loaded his handgun, went back to the windows, and saw the people thrusting at the door and getting more aggressive, according to the statement. He fired one shot toward the door. He said the door never opened, and he didn't announce himself or say anything before he pulled the trigger. When told he had killed Rios, he put his head down on the table and said he didn't mean for anything to happen to anybody. Anderson's wife, Yoshi Anderson, told investigators that her husband told her that he had told a neighbor if anyone tries to break into his house, he would shoot them. The probable cause statement does not say when this conversation happened. She added that her husband fired the shot from the top of the stairs, and neither of them went downstairs. He fired the shot and then told her to call 911, she said. Investigators found a bullet hole in the door, but no evidence of any forceful contact with the door itself, the latch, or the door frame, according to the probable cause statement. Rios' husband, Mauricio Velasquez, told investigators that she tried to open the door with keys from their cleaning company, but they unknowingly were at the wrong address. He said they'd been trying to open the door for 30 seconds to a minute before she was shot. He said they never heard any voices from inside or saw any movement. The couple didn't knock, bang on the door, or use force of any kind to enter the home, and they never got inside, he said.
That concludes the news from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette for Tuesday, November 18th. We will now take a short break and return with obituaries and features from the living section.